Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Ranting Again. This is Dennis Miller. The Single Life. Now, I don't want to get off on a rant here, but I'm glad my single days are over. Sure, I hear guys talking about personal freedom, how they don't have to answer to anybody, and how they're meeting all sorts of new people. But the grim reality is that scientists estimate that the average American male spends a full 4 days of his single life hearing the phrase, "Pull the car over, asshole. I'm walking." There's so much paranoia and mistrust between the sexes, it makes the war room and Dr. Strangelove look like the jacuzzi at Plato's Retreat. Sure, everybody loves the show Friends, but come on, that's not singles reality. In the real singles world, you live in an apartment the size of Billy Barty's walk-in closet with three roommates who are flakier than a Greek pastry placed on Wally George's shoulder. Roommates who 2 weeks into the relationship tell you they spent their rent money on a QVC alabaster statuette of Hermann Göring that they are hollowing out into a bong. While striving for independence, you begin to realize that you've become a daycare center for a bunch of lazy sleep farmers. So let's just say that Friends, while it's a great show, is not exactly a reconnaissance photo of the day-to-day machinations of the solo life. That being said, it's a lot better than the single people I saw on TV growing up. Ebb, Jethro, Tony Nelson, and Major Healy. No wonder my single life seemed to go on forever. I was walking around in an Elmer Fudd hat and a rope belt looking for a genie to blow me. For me, dating was like a casting call for America's Most Wanted. I once dated a girl who was so twisted her personalities formed their own softball league. My life was emptier than Richard Harris's minibar at the Chateau Marmont. I was so desperate when I told my friends, "Hey, there are other fish in the sea." I meant other fish. Folks, what I'm saying is I fucked saltwater seafood. Wasn't proud of it then, not proud of it now. As a matter of fact, I probably wouldn't have brought it up if this rant wasn't running a little short. Not that the women who dated me had it easy either. When I eventually did get a date, I was so excited I looked like Martini when he finally got the boat ride in Cuckoo's Nest. Towards the end of my single life, I was frozen with fear about how to even go about meeting my soulmate. I mean, come on, singles bars? Do you know how hard it was for me to keep a straight face while some stoner broad told me what she thought Pink Floyd meant on the Dark Side of the Moon? Personal ads? I just don't know if I'd be comfortable trying to communicate with my future spouse in the same way the cops contacted the Zodiac Killer and Dirty Harry. And of course, the newest way for singles to meet each other is through their home computers online. And I don't want to burst your bubble, Spanky.com, but you know all those succulent Hawaiian tropic chicks you think you're trading fantasies with? Well, they're actually 50-year-old fat guys who make Abe Vigoda look like Marcus Schenkenberg. Forget computers. Humans need physical contact. I'll take the clap over carpal tunnel syndrome any day. And single people, if you still don't get it, I'll translate it for the commitment impaired. Marriage is a never-ending series of one-night stands. And I am on the biggest hot streak of my life. So forget single. Wake up and smell the stranger next to you. Marriage is the last step of personal evolution. It is the opposable thumb of human intimacy. So come out of the ape cage and give Darwin your phone number, damn it. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. Generation X. Now, I don't want to get off on a rant here, but isn't it about time we get off Generation X's tattooed back? It's no wonder Xers are angst-ridden and rudderless. They feel America's greatness has passed. They got to the cocktail party 20 minutes too late, and all that's left are those little wieners and a half-empty bottle of Zima. So that's why they're threatened. But why do we find them so threatening? I thought we were a little hipper than that, or at least we were when we were their age. You must remember that then, as now, it remains the single most important function of a generation to irk the living shit out of the generation immediately preceding it. Screw the old squares. Listen to a faster beat. Wear a wider cuff. Get a Beavis and Gingrich tattoo. Change. Life is about change. More than that, life is like riding the bus. It requires change. The so-called Generation X has gotten a bad rap for being whiners. But people in their 20s have always been whiners. People in their 20s should be whiners. They are to whining what Pavarotti is to, Tommy. Okay, I don't know much about opera. The reason you whine is that you've just popped out of the cozy, beer-filled, amniotic sack of academia. You haven't developed the prerequisite thick hide of the cynical, callous bastard yet, and your future seems bleaker than Ingmar Bergman listening to an acoustic set performed by Leonard Cohen. Add to the angst bouillabaisse the current prospects of an unpredictable economy, an environment that's choking to death on its own shit, and a sexual atmosphere that's about as warm, safe, and inviting as a Zagreb bunker. Christ, if I were in my 20s now, I'd be bitching so hard I'd make Beck sound like Tony Newley. Additionally, this generation of young adults is being forced to experience every cultish fumble of their coming of age, with the media doing a hushed, reverentially breathless play-by-play. It's kind of like if Dr. Frankenstein gave a running commentary of whatever the monster was doing all day. What's the result of all that scrutiny? It would appear mass-marketed nonconformity. The real world on MTV holding auditions. Auditions. For the fucking real world. Everyone's so busy playing to the cameras that nobody's creating anything. That's why they use all of our stuff. The Brady Bunch, Platform Shoes, Tony Bennett. They suffer from generational performance anxiety because we baby boomers are constantly pounding our chests about our salad days. To hear us tell it, the late 60s and early 70s were a time when between orgies everybody got together and put on Woodstock. Then, between band breaks, we put a stop to the unjust war going on and brought a rogue chief executive officer to his knees, all while smoking the most incredible cheap herb in the history of the dilated planet. You know, they heard all about the free love of the 60s and 70s, but now it's the 90s. The balloon payment is due, and their generation has to pay the mortgage. Instead of casual sex, they have precautionary sex. Nothing ruins the mood during foreplay more than the recurring image of your 65-year-old homeroom teacher trying to stretch a condom over a cucumber. So believe me, I understand the origins of their discontent, and I empathize. Having said that, I'll be damned if I know what makes these kids tick. It appears their personal philosophy places a great deal of value on getting so many body piercings that you begin to look like you fell down a flight of stairs carrying a tackle box. Body piercing, a powerful, compelling visual statement that says, gee, in today's competitive job market, what can I do to make myself even more unemployable? Fashion is an interesting sword when being wielded by disaffected youth. Any guy that remembers being a teenager knows that many youthful uprisings take place in pants, so the practicality of wearing them so big you could smuggle a heart on the size of a beagle is not lost on me. Well, what else is most important to them? As far as stimulants go, both of our generations know the feeling of jonesing for product from Colombia. It's just that their product is coffee. And by the way, is it asking too much to be able to drink a cup of Joe in public without having to listen to some malcontent working out their issues next to me? It's bad enough that these coffee houses all seem to have purchased their furniture at the same Dresden fire sale. And when the guy who's been occupying a table for the entire time he's been growing his goatee finally gets up and clears away his journal and his clove cigarettes and his Tibetan worry beads, and you can finally sit down, you realize that the table is wobbling because one leg is so much shorter than all the others that the only thing that would balance it is a hardcover copy of Marcel Proust's Remembrance of Things Past, and you're finally enjoying your cafe whatever and your triple berry chocolate chip six-grain scone when some chick with a buzz cut wearing cat's-eye sunglasses and an orange and avocado green-feathered Joanne Worley Sakatumi dress and combat boots stands up in front and starts reading a poem she wrote about the first guy who ever felt her up. All right, so I just tipped my hand. Maybe I'm not as comfy with these kids as I let on. Maybe it's true. Maybe there's a gap between the baby boomers and the Generation Xers that makes the Khyber Pass look like the eye of the needle. How did that happen? Well, I'll tell you how it happened. It happened because we have become our parents, the caretakers of the status quo, set in our ways, afraid of change, prattling on and on about our Ford Windstars while tapping our feet to Wang Chung in our dentist's waiting room. Look, sure, Xers are pissed. And they're just beginning to understand that it's because we owe them and we haven't said a damn word about it. It's like that friend who owes you money but makes you feel like an asshole for bringing it up. Well, trust me, fellow elders, it's time to brace up and get ready because natural progression dictates...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?